Hey, comic book fans, this is Diane Pershing. You've heard me as Poison Ivy on Batman, Dale Arden on Flash Gordon, and many other animated series. And now you're hearing me on Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, pop culture podcast fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thank you so much for joining me here in the lair this week. Getting a lot of good feedback from a bunch of you out there on my recent Lost in Space celebrations taking place over the past month plus on the show. So glad to hear many of you out there enjoying these interviews I had with the cast of the original series, Bill Mumy, Angela Cartwright, Mark Goddard, Marta Kristen, they were all here. The executive producer of the new Lost in Space series, Kevin Burns, as well as Lost in Space author Mark Cushman. Got a lot of good feedback. I got some more feedback coming up later in the show, so you'll hear some of that. So had a blast putting those together. Glad you're enjoying them. If you haven't had a chance, check them out. Then after you listen to today's show, by all means, go back and check those out. It looks like we've also got a few new listeners hanging out in the lair with us right now. Some new followers of Comic Book Central on social media as well. So if you are new to the show, welcome. Glad to have you on board. Always have fun each and every week here in Comic Book Central. A lot of great conversations out there waiting for you as well. Again, after today's show, if you're new to the show, go back and check them out. My chats with over 200 celebrity guests, they're out there. Another fantastic chat lined up for this week as well. An extraordinary talent is set to join me in just a few minutes. She is the voice of Dale Arden from Flash Gordon. She's the voice of Poison Ivy from Batman the Animated Series. Love both of those series. So many other characters that we know and love. Diane Pershing, she's going to be here today. Really excited to talk with her. My conversation with Diane just around the corner. So that's coming your way here. I mentioned those past episodes of Comic Book Central, also Comic Book Central on social media. Again, if you're new to the show, the online hub is the website, comicbookcentral.net. That is where you're going to find each and every episode in the archive. You go to episodes, all they're archived by year there. You can get them for streaming, for downloading, whatever you want. On the website, you're also going to find links to the show on Twitter and Facebook. I post the new episodes there every week. There's a complete episode in the About section on Facebook. So if you're looking for a specific guest, you can find it there. You'll also find a link to the show on iTunes where you can subscribe to the show. Again, you get all those past episodes that way. You put yourself in line for every episode that's headed your way. Every Saturday, trust me, so much good stuff coming your way. You definitely want to do that if you haven't already. And again, if you like what you're hearing, I always say it, please leave a review on iTunes and share the lair. As always, help get the word out about the show. Share the Facebook post, retweet on Twitter every week. That helps it to get to an even bigger audience. We get even more people coming in here and joining us right here in the lair. So tell everyone you know. I always appreciate when you do that. All right, kids, time to get animated with my special guest today. Check this out, and then I'm going to be right back to sit down and chat with actress Diane Pershing. Born and raised in Queens, New York, Diane moved to the West Coast and then attended college at UCLA. And performing caught her attention, which manifested itself not only in a music career, but acting in regional theater as well. Those acting skills eventually guided Diane into a field we fans of animation can appreciate, voiceover work. She quickly became one of the top voice actors in the industry, in large part thanks to her incredible body of work for animation studio Filmation. Now, when the Filmation creation Isis made the transition from live action to animation, Diane supplied the voice of the superhero who controls the natural elements. She was also Mighty Mouse's better half, Pearl Pureheart, and she portrayed several characters on Filmation's Flash Gordon series, including the iconic adventurer Dale Arden. A series after series, character after character followed. And in 1995, Diane entered the world of the Dark Knight Detective, becoming the first actress to bring the character of Poison Ivy to life in Batman the Animated Series.
Batman. A late night rendezvous? To what do I owe the honor?
Harvey Dent.
Oh, the poor district attorney. I hear he's not expected to live. Oh, it's so sad.
Why, Isley?
Oh, please, call me Poison Ivy.
Along the way, Diane got to showcase her storytelling skills as she contributed scripts for several hit television shows and penned numerous romance novels, all proving that she is accomplished in just about every aspect of entertaining. Now, joining me in the lair for a chat today is an immensely talented singer, songwriter, screenwriter, author, and actress. She's the voice of some of our favorite heroes and one especially poisonous supervillain. A big Comic Book Central welcome to Diane Pershing. Diane, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Joe. What a pleasure.
Oh, so glad to have you here. I always love talking to, especially people who worked on Batman the Animated Series. It's always fun because you guys are animated. I mean, like, the voice cast is so unbelievable for the show.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get to that. You've got a lot on your resume here. I mentioned author. Close to 20 or maybe even over that now, 20 romance novels?
Actually, it was 19 to be perfectly honest. 19 romance novels got published in about 15, 16 years period when I was writing them.
Okay.
And I haven't written them for, maybe 10 years or so. It was a phase in my life and I enjoyed it enormously. And then I was sort of done.
Okay. I didn't know if you were still writing them or if it was still something or if that's just like take a break from it and I'll get back to it.
No, it was one of, I actually have had so many, as you can see from my resume, various things have come along in my life and I've
done it all.
done them when they interested me. And then at some point I sort of stopped doing them because for whatever reason, they didn't challenge me anymore. I moved on. I've always done the voiceovers. That's from being a tiny person in my, not very tiny actually, in my early 20s, I've always done voiceovers. That's been the one constant.
You have done it all, like I said. Okay, so on the topic of romance novels, if you were going to write a romance novel involving comic book characters, which ones would you choose and why?
Involving comic book characters, wow. Ask me how familiar I am with comic book characters.
You better be familiar with at least two of them.
Oh, God. Let me think.
This is going to be a really short interview.
well, yeah. I mean, I grew up with Archie comics and, that kind of thing. And I grew up with really scary horror comics and
did you read the romance comics? Because there were like a ton of those back in the day. Like
oh,
they always
no.
had like oh, you didn't read it. Okay, that's I'm interested because you eventually got into
never,
that.
I wasn't even interested in writing romance novels until I read my first one, which was I was older then. I had never read one before. So
you were into the scary stuff as a kid.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. For a while. And then some of the stuff got too scary. I started feeling like I was in them and I was going to drown and I was going to be creeped out and all this stuff. And then, no more.
Yeah, I think they put the brakes on that too for a while with the Comics Code. I think they were scaring some
kids.
Some of those covers were like, really?
Oh, horrible. Yeah. Anyway, I don't think I can answer that question very well for you. I feel so bad.
Could we, like a Flash Gordon Del Arden romance novel? That'd be awesome.
Oh, of course. That would be, well, they are in a romance.
They are. But that would be cool if you would write like an original novel. That would be awesome if you could kind of revisit the character. I'm just curious if that was in your brain. Look, you mentioned you've done it all. Singing, too. Was that your first love?
That was what I shone at as a child. I sang for everybody, and then I did go on the road. My first job was with Johnny Mathis, believe it or not, as a backup singer.
Great gig.
What a great gig it was.
Yeah.
How old were you at that point when you're singing with Johnny Mathis? I was just out of college.
Wow.
Just out of college. So I was, I guess, 21, something like that.
Kid.
Yeah, I was very lucky. And I'd been doing musical comedy stuff for years, so I did that. And then I was backup singer, and then I was in some singing groups, The Establishment, and we did a whole bunch of TV shows and Vegas and that kind of thing.
When you say musical comedy, was this like a touring show? Like how did that manifest itself?
Various ones. Usually Equity Waiver stuff in LA by then. I went overseas at one point with Carousel to entertain the troops. I played Nettie, the one who sings You'll Never Walk Alone,
mm-hmm.
the tearjerker.
That's a pretty big song, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a big one.
That's a huge
requires
one.
A Good, strong high note, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you had that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you, now you were born in Queens, right?
Yes, Queens,
okay,
New
so
York.
When, at what point did you, so college was UCLA, so that got you to the West Coast?
Well, actually, we moved out to the West Coast when I was in high school.
You were already there, okay.
We were, I was already there, and UCLA had this fabulous theater department, so I was very lucky, yeah.
Was
yeah.
it just the performing aspect of it? Just performing from such a young age, just interested in that.
Yes.
I mean, was there, what kind of influences did you have that made you think, like, I got to do, just, it, just something about it appealed to you? You
look
the
to
center
the
of attention.
Got to do this. Yeah. One of those. I was very young. Well, I was already a movie buff. I love, you know that I also write film reviews?
Yes.
Do you know that? Right. So from a very young age, I was a major movie buff, and I would look in the mirror and pretend to be somebody very exotic and fabulous in the mirror and say, this is what I'm going to do. But later on, it became, I'm going to star on Broadway. I'm going to knock them out and so on. But it was always acting, and I never swerved. My parents begged me to, you know, get credentialed as a teacher or take typing or whatever. And I said, no, sorry.
Get a real job. Yeah, don't do this show business thing. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no. No, and of course it was smart advice, but I didn't want anything to fall back on.
I've heard that from some people, because some people have said if you have a plan B, then you'll probably fall back on the plan B. Like if you don't have a plan
exactly.
B, then you only can do plan A.
Because it's a discouraging business, and the chances of doing well in it and supporting yourself in it, as I have for all these years, are so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, you know, but nah, waiting on tables was fine, you know.
So how did you go from singing, performing music, that era, into acting and more like TV?
Because
I do want to talk about your TV writing gigs. I didn't know if all that overlapped or how that
overlapped.
Again, there's so much. It's like a million things.
Well, I always loved to write. I still love to write. I wrote great essays in college, you know, and I wrote poetry when I was younger. So that just, Joe, I have a life filled with serendipity. I turn a corner that I hadn't gone down before, and all of a sudden there's something new. And I was thinking about writing a TV script, and then I got introduced to a man who lived in my neighborhood who was also thinking of writing a TV script, and we hooked up, and we wrote this spec script for The Love Boat, and then they liked it. They didn't buy it, but they bought another one, and then another one, and then they asked us to be on staff, and I was on staff in The Love Boat. You know, I was the lone female.
I have to ask about this, because one of my favorite shows is The Love Boat.
Oh, yeah,
it was fun. One of your episodes is the 200th episode, like the landmark 200th cruise. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that was one of those, and I still get residual thank you, Writers Guild.
What is that? How much does that kick out? Like when one airs, like do you get a check for like $1.75 or something, or how does it work?
No, that's the cartoons.
Got it. That's the Dale Arden stuff.
I'm down to, the early Filmation ones, I'm down to, you know, 5 cents.
Really? Like Dale, are you kidding? Or is there like an actual check that comes in for 5 cents?
No. I'm literally down to 5 cents now.
That's
I don't bother cashing those checks anymore. It's too much work.
Doesn't that like throw off their accounting?
Well, it might, but you know what? They'll learn to deal with it.
I guess after 6 months, they're okay. This episode is called Hidden Treasure. Was one of the stories. It's like three stories in A Love Boat, and you get one
every
of the
time. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah. So yeah. you get one of the tales.
Yeah.
Andy Griffith and Cloris Leachman. In your episode, Hidden Treasure, like they're going after this rare stamp, this hidden treasure stamp that's somewhere aboard. The Pacific Princess. Yeah. It's.
I mean, what a cast! Seriously.
Did you get like? Were you on set, or do you just write and move on, or like? Do you get to hang out?
I was able. I was allowed to go on set when I wanted to, and once in a while I'd watch the filming. But it's a little boring after a while. It really is, because there's so many stops and there's starts, and they're only saying 5 lines with this setup and then 2 lines with that setup.
Yeah,
it's
it takes forever, right?
Yeah, yeah. So,
did you go on for that one, though? Because, this episode has Andy Warhol, Andy Griffith, Cloris Leachman, Milton Berle. Terry Hatcher's one of the mermaids. And
Well, each story is filmed separately, of course. And then they're written to splice together, the morning ones, takeoff, landing, not takeoff, but embarkation.
Yeah, when they're throwing all the
first
confetti.
Night
there,
and all that stuff, Yeah.
I didn't know if you hung out just because like all the these legendary stars were coming in. I didn't know if you got to meet like Cloris Leachman or Andy Griffith or any of them.
First of all, Andy Griffith I'd met because I did a show in Vegas with him as one of the backup singers.
Oh, cool.
So I already knew him. Isn't that wonderful fun? And Don Knotts was in that was on that that thing too.
Nice.
Great. Yeah. But may I be honest? Well, of course I'm being honest whether I like it or not. I'm not a real celebrity hound.
Okay.
I love the work. I admire the people, but I don't get that much from, quote, meeting them, unquote.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You never know, like, if somebody's, like, a fanboy, fangirl, if they, you know,
especially when... Oh, if they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just see, like, Milton Berle, and I'm like, you know what? I'd find a reason to just, like, hang out on the set just to, you know...
Okay. Yeah,
to meet Uncle Milty or something, you know?
He was a big one, was big in early TV,
Well, that's cool. Yeah, so you've got the love boat. So, okay, so there's television screenwriting... And then how do you get into voice acting? Where did that, what corner did you turn to find that world?
Serendipity. Here we go. I was already doing a few commercials on camera. And I was at my commercial agent's office and I was talking to the agent and this guy walks by and stops and he says, "Have you ever done voiceovers?" And I said, "What is that?" And he said, "Come see me." So I went down and he was...
You know, by the way, every person that wants to get into voiceover acting hates this story because they're like, tried it. Like, how do you get into this?
And
you have a dude that comes up to you like, "Hey, kid, want to be in showbiz?"
Well, you know, I mean, it's timing. It's luck. Yeah. But you can't create either of those, right?
Yeah.
So the bottom line is I have a very pleasant speaking voice. I wouldn't say it's astonishing at that particular time. He said that. I went into his office. He's legendary. He was legendary early on. His name is Bob Lloyd. And he brought up a lot of really big voice people. And he heard me and said, you know, he explained. I said, "Oh, yeah, sure, I can do that." I'd already done puppet voices for a little television, a little local TV show. So I kind of knew how to, you know, do different voices. And then I was lucky enough to have my career take off from there. And it was a wonderful time.
Do you remember what your first gig was? Oh, so go ahead. It was a wonderful time, you said, for women?
My first gig, you want serendipity? The phone rings while I'm in this guy's office, and they want a woman. I love this story. They want a woman to read live copy during the Lakers game because they feel that no one will listen anymore to all the men doing commercials. They want a woman's voice for JCPenney. And the guy, Bob Lloyd, says, "She's sitting right here." And that afternoon, I went down to the Forum. It was the old Forum. And I was handed a piece of paper, and I practiced a couple of times to see if I could get the 60 seconds. And I did pretty well. And I did it live. And I was the voice of JCPenney in Southern California for 7 years.
Oh, wow. Off of one phone call where you just happened to be in an office.
A phone call where I happened to be in the office. So you can hate me if you're listening to this. And may I also say, just to counterbalance that, that there have been many, many things I'd like to have done in my life that I didn't get the chance to do because no serendipity happened.
Isn't that part of it, though, is just putting yourself into situations of just like maybe opening yourself to all these things that you hadn't thought of before?
Totally.
And I think doesn't that sort of like add to the serendipity, like sort of amp that up on some level?
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. I am ready. First of all, I am talented and I am trained, but that gets you nothing, as we know. We have brilliant, wonderful, amazing friends with lots and lots of talents who've just never been able to break in or make a living or anything. So I'm only that. That's the part. The rest of it is I'm out there. I meet people. I say yes instead of I'm scared. Okay? It's that.
The answer's always yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you meet the great Lou Scheimer from Filmation?
Darling man. I don't really remember. You know, it's been a while.
I know, and I apologize to my guests all the time. I say I go back. Like, we're watching this stuff now, but we go back all these things and go like, "What did you do?"
Oh,
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I apologize.
I imagine it was simply I auditioned for one of their cartoons, and then I did a whole bunch for them.
Okay. Was
they had a little you know group of people that they used over and over again, and
right.
I was lucky enough to be part of that.
Was the one of the first ones Freedom Force as ISIS?
I'm sorry, I don't remember. I do remember the Mighty Mouse one, where I was there.
Pearl Pureheart.
Pearl Pureheart. You know, that was a fun one. I got to really do a silly voice for that one, you know.
But, how much of Pearl did you, like, was that you, and how much did they enhance through effects?
You're asking me questions that I have no information about, because I didn't do post-production.
Right.
Because
that voice is
when
really
I hear
high.
It, well, it's very high. I would do this, and then I would imagine that they would go a little higher. See?
That's pretty much on. It's they probably didn't have to do a whole lot with it. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And I also can speak pretty quickly, so it's not like, you know, like they had to speed me up so I sounded even more blah, 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 you know?
Oh, especially for commercial work. That's amazing that you can do that, because when you're trying to fit copy into a certain time frame, that's probably another reason you got a lot of gigs, just because you could pull that off.
Yes, I have an inner time clock that I think you're born with, I swear. I don't think you can train it.
Yeah, I agree. I've written a lot of copy for voiceovers and have done some voiceover. And it's definitely within the DNA, I think, on some people. Do you recall at all, like, working? Because the Filmation, Freedom Force, as you were ISIS, that was only like 5 episodes. I don't know why they only did 5 episodes of these things, but...
Okay.
Do you recall working on that series at all? Because it was originally a live action series with Joanna Cameron that they did. It was part of the Shazam Hour, and it was ISIS, and she was this goddess. And then they made it into a animated series, but Joanna Cameron didn't come back for that role.
And you know so much more about this than
I do. Well, I did send you the link. I didn't know if you had a chance to look at it. I didn't know if you had a chance to look at one of the links that I sent you.
I did. I watched one of them.
Okay.
I enjoyed it enormously. I thought, geez, that's good.
But one of those ones that's lost to time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I also watched part of the movie version of the Flash Gordon thing with the Chinese subtitles.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because from the VHS, that's like the only...
Right.
Well, that's the certainly one of the... look, you led me right into Dale Arden. I mean, arguably, two of the greatest animated series in TV history. Flash Gordon for Filmation and Batman the Animated Series. You're a part of both of those worlds. You're the
Seriously?
First, yeah, you're the first Dale Arden in animation, so that's pretty cool.
Yes.
And you're the first Poison Ivy ever.
Yes.
So that's, you should talk about a resume.
And I mean, I had no idea that I was any, not that I am, but that my voice performances were anything iconic or special until recently someone informed me I had more of a fan base than I was aware of. And then that's when I started, you know, I did my first Comic-Con this year.
Well, that's what I get
first
from talking.
Time.
Oh, you've only just done one, like now?
One. I've got three or four more booked for this year, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
No, seriously,
you were missing out.
Long Beach.
That's
well, I was.
That's amazing.
But I didn't know. You do a job and you dismiss it and you have a life, you know?
Well, see, that's what I get from talking to a lot of voice actors, you know, especially back in the day, because once you did those, you moved on, and they didn't even really, like, you saw a list of names at the end, maybe if as a kid you stayed for the credits, but, you know, what kid's staying for the credits? They're on to the, you know, their bowl of cereal and the next cartoon. But, like, you don't see these things. Now, man, we dig into these things and the voice actors, and we find out everything about them, and we see you guys behind the microphones, and we see you acting, and there's all these DVD extras and interviews, and it's like we know probably more about the voice actors than a lot of times the characters themselves.
And we do.
Yeah.
No, really. The joy of the voice actor's life is that, I mean, I went out to Costco this morning, and I didn't put on any makeup. You know, I don't. I mean, I look like me. You know, I have a sweatshirt on. I went out to Costco. I did a big shopping. I went to Soup Plantation for lunch. You know, I'm. That's it.
No Poison Ivy groupies hanging around outside on your lawn.
Oh no, 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 no. But when I do meet my fans now, wow.
No, and that's, again, like, you know, I talk to voiceover artists, and there's an anonymity to voiceover work that I think has probably gone away these days. Because now, yeah, again, we are seeing you guys at the conventions, and you're, like, signing pictures and all these things. So,
well, it's not gone away if you haven't done conventions, so I've been very happily anonymous.
That's true.
Seriously, I've been very happily anonymous, and someone will say, I thought I heard you on this commercial. I say, yeah, I did that. And it's how I earn my living. You know what I mean? But it's not showbiz, glitter, glamour, all that stuff, and I personally like it.
It's good work if you can get it, yeah.
Exactly. However, now that I've discovered these Comic Cons, I had the best time. Oh, the best time.
What was the reaction at your first one? Like, how did, from your perspective, and then what were the reactions you were getting from the fans?
The reactions of the fans is they are, some of them shake when they come up to say hello, because that's how important the character was for them. Some of them cry. Hmm. Most of them just grin broadly. I talk to all of them. I find them so interesting and fascinating and good people. I did not know what to expect. I didn't get the fact that you can be mildly obsessed and still be a good person. You know what I mean?
It's a good way to sum up fan base, yes.
There we go, you know. And I had a wonderful time. And also, I like people. I'm one of those people that likes people, you know.
And that's a great way to meet people, too, and meet your fan base. And I think the fun part about this is, for us fans, is that we do love these characters. They have this immense history. Dale Arden, over 80 years of history with this character. I mean, that had to be a kick to play
her. You've been really helpful because you gave me those links.
I did send you. Yes,
stuff.
I did.
No, and it was, and I really hadn't seen. I tried to find some of these things on YouTube and wasn't able to do it easily. Maybe you have to search a little better or with different words or whatever than I used. But what you sent me was like, and I went, wow, and Bob Ridgely did Flash Gordon, the late great Bob Ridgely. He is no longer with us, but. The funniest and foulest man ever.
Really?
He had, he would have us in stitches during the sessions. He had the foulest and most brilliant sense of humor. He was in all the Mel Brooks movies. He was one of the, you know, comic people.
Yeah.
This was a straight role that he did. But, you know, he was an amazing man, no longer with us, sad to say.
He did such a great job. Yeah. I was wondering about your relationship with him because... sometimes you get into these animated projects. Sometimes you're recording with the cast. I know on Batman the Animated Series, which we'll talk about, you definitely recorded with the cast, like a radio play. Was it the same on Flash Gordon, where the cast was together, or did you record everything separately?
Filmation. It was one of those things where what you did back then was it was Filmation and Marvel and all the Warner Brothers. You recorded as an ensemble. And we all loved that, of course, because then we could actually be actors looking at other actors, making eye contact, having reactions the way you do as an actor, you know, and it felt wonderful. It's rarely done that way anymore for time constraints and people's schedules and all that stuff, you know.
Did that enhance your performances, just being able to play off
definitely.
The other actors' reactions?
As far as I'm concerned, it always made it better, because one of the primary rules in acting is listening. And just reacting naturally to what you just heard. And if you're not listening to anybody, but perhaps some kind of assistant read a line to you, or nothing at all, just making up however the line was in your head and then recording it, it's got a different texture, a different tonality. It really does.
Yeah, and this animated series was amazing. I put it up there with some of the top ones. It's Flash Gordon, the feature-length film, is The Greatest Adventure of All. It's so strange, and I don't know how much you know about this or what your experience was during this. 1979 was when it was put together to kind of sell this. That feature-length movie didn't air until like 3 years later on NBC, and I think you guys went off and did the animated series, which they kind of busted up that feature and spread it out over a few different episodes. So I don't know how much you are aware of how this was being sold or what your process was working on it. But I'm telling you what, that animated feature, it doesn't get much better than that. Not too many animated features at the time opened with the invasion of Poland.
Exactly. And when I was watching it, I thought, this is really good animation. They were ahead of their time.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's
and it's so
fabulous.
Yeah, and it's very dark and it's very realistic when you go. Now, there's a technique that they use, and again, I don't know how much you were involved in this. It was like this rotoscoping that they'd used where they had filmed, you know, live action, the actors. And again, I don't know how much, you know, if you were involved in this, but like running and doing all these different scenes and then animating over top of the film. So do you get that fluid motion? So you weren't involved in any of that, right? You just did the voices?
It seems to me, for some reason, that on one or two of them, I might have done some of that. But again, my memory is very foggy. What is this, 30 years ago?
Yeah,
more?
1979. Yeah, we're going back a ways.
Oh, yeah. You know, 40, 30, 38 years ago, whatever. Please.
Well, the reason I asked, too, because the kiss at the end of it between, you know, Flash and Dale is definitely that rotoscoping technique. So I didn't know if, like, you and Robert Ridgely
No, I did not. Who did all that stuff, huh?
Okay, that's why I was interested in because, you know, they talked, I think it was like a secretary in the office, like one of the secretaries I think they used is one of the models or something like that. So, yeah, I just didn't know if they used some of the actors in those things at all. Were you familiar at all with Flash Gordon, Dale Arden,
actually,
maybe the serials, the TV show?
I was, because am I wrong? You know the Flash Gordon film? With the Queen soundtrack.
Oh yeah, we're very familiar with their Sam Jones friend of the show. Yeah.
Love that film. I mean, I thought it was terrific. And was that before or after this?
This is all around the same time because they're making that while you're making yours. So the series came out like right around the same time I think of the movie. Because that was all there was a big flash like 79, 80. The movie came out in 80.
And I seem to remember Flash Gordon from the cartoon, from the comics, right?
Yeah, you had the comics, you had the comic strip,
the old
serials with Buster Crabb, you had the TV show.
Yes, wait a minute. I'm going to age myself now, but actually, so what, right?
I do that every week. I do that once a week on this show.
When I was a kid in New York, Saturday was... You drop the kids off at the movie, and we saw a couple of cartoons, a couple of serials, maybe a newsreel, a B movie, and an A movie.
Okay, so you got the serials.
The kids on the block were gone for most of the day, and the mothers could relax.
Yeah.
And yes, I remember with Buster, just now when you said Buster Crabbe, of course I remember that.
Okay, all right. Well, see, that's what I love about the animated series that you worked on, is that they did have those as cliffhangers, that each one is a chapter. At least the first season, they kind of got away from that in the second because for syndication it didn't work. But it was serialized. The first season is serialized. It ends and you are in trouble. Dale's in trouble. Flash has to save her, you know. And then it's chapter two next, you know. And that was like the brilliance of that.
Wow.
But unfortunately, it doesn't work in syndication because you want to bounce those episodes all over the place. At least Filmation did. Filmation recycled just about everything.
Yes, right. I know. Darling people, Norm Prescott and Lou Scheimer, the best.
What was your favorite part about that character? Very strong woman, very strong presence in that. She was
Dale Arden, girl reporter.
Yeah.
You know, she was bright. She was interesting. She was verbal. She was strong. And nobody made her do the girl stuff. Except when she had to dress up, you know, as whatever, a harem girl or whatever.
They did have that.
And they did. They did have that, which is fine. But the bottom line is the character was not, shall we say, waiting for a man to come and fix her, you know?
I love your line in chapter two where Dale says, "I'm no wilting violet. I share the risks with you."
There we go. And that was who she was. So that was my first... feminist character, shall I say. And a lot of the women that come up to me for the Poison Ivy say she was a feminist. You know, I think, well, yeah, but a little kind of murderous, you know.
She went the other direction a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't know if we... Yeah. I think we want to model our behavior more on Dale Arden. I think that's a safe...
I believe so. Yeah.
Safe assumption on that. Yeah, it's an amazing series. It's tough to find, but I know it's on Amazon, and you can stream the episodes free there, which is pretty cool. Not the feature... You can dig a little bit and find the feature.
That would be great.
But Amazon, they do run it, and hopefully we'll get. And I know it was out on DVD a while back, but it's out of print and it's cost forever. But you can catch it on animation. Speaking of Dale Arden, just to come full circle on this, Defenders of the Earth, 1987. First episode, they killed off Dale Arden.
But I did it. I did Defenders of the Earth.
You did. You did a voice. Yeah, you were Dynac X.
Oh, I was the robot. I was the computer voice. Yeah. Listen, I did all the episodes. I got my residuals. They're now down 60. To one cent.
That was my point. I love the fact that you got work out of it. That's the most amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I hate the fact that they killed off Dale, though.
That, you know, I didn't remember that, and that makes me sad.
Yeah.
65
episodes, though, in one season. Like, you were cranking these out.
That one and the New Centurions.
Yeah. That's like another 65 episodes, right?
Another 65 episodes. Oh, honey, what a nice year I had.
Yeah.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
That was amazing. Yeah, they transfer, like, and I was surprised at that because the first episode, like, because it's like Flash and it's Mandrake the Magician and it's the Phantom. And, like, they're kids, and there's, like, a bunch of kids. And then there's, like, Flash, or what's it, Rick, I think Rick Gordon is his name or something. But, like, Mom dies in, like, the first episode, and they have to transfer her consciousness into this computer. Yeah, so you did the voice of the computer, which is pretty awesome.
There we go.
Okay. But did you, like, so at no point, though, did you, like, say anything, like, well, how dare you kill off Dale Arden?
Well, you know, I might have, but guess how many years ago again that was.
But then they're like, well, we'll give you 65 episodes. And you're like, hey, sweet. So
I will take the work. Ask me if I have any loyalty to Dale Arden at all. You want me to be a robot? I'll be a robot. That'll be fine.
As well you should. And another character you have loyalty to, as we mentioned, Dr. Pamela Lillian Isley.
Yes.
Better known as Poison Ivy. How did she come into your life?
You want serendipity again?
Yes, I do, please.
Here we go. Okay. I had been booked on... I think the first one that she was in was what, the third or fourth of the season, I think, episode.
Episode five, Pretty Poison.
Well, I had been booked for an incidental voice for some reason. I was booked to go in, and I went in to do, I don't know, some person, I don't know. Anyway, and Andrea Romano, whom I didn't know, had heard me talking and said, the actress that was supposed to do Poison Ivy, I don't know if she was ill or unavailable or got another gig. I don't know what it was. But she said, would you like to read for it? And
You're
I said,
kidding.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
I'm serious. I'm serious. I know.
Wow.
But
so you're there to
I
just do like a nurse or an officer in the background or something or a secretary or something.
Yes. And but, you know, let us put into perspective the fact that I would have maybe done 85 auditions before I booked maybe five of them. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying that all my life has been like that, but in this particular case, who knew that I was going to
Yeah, you're not just walking into doors and they're throwing money at you.
No.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you're
hitting the pavement and,
working
the auditions.
So I said, sure. And I read the thing and I went, oh, yeah, I got her. I'll do a little bit of my sexy voice, but I have to make sure that she sounds very intelligent because she's a PhD.
There you go.
So that's what I did. And then I auditioned. She said, you got it.
Did they have a picture of the character for you to look at? Did they give you any reference point?
It seems to me that I must have seen a picture.
Okay.
It seems to me because I wouldn't know otherwise. I mean, how really sexy she was.
Yeah, because like even the design, I think they mentioned that it was kind of like based on the women from Little Abner. They kind of, you know,
yeah,
drew, like they had the realistic
Daisy
women.
Daisy May?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I always think of her as Tinkerbell, but sexy.
Well, there you go. You get the green outfit.
I mean,
outfit.
Really, the little curvy body with the green and the whole thing. And then, of course, you actually put a woman in that, you know. Yeah.
That's an amazing. So you got the gig right then. I mean, did they tell you or did you have to, like, leave and then you came back? Or, like, you knew right then?
Well, she said, I think she probably looked at the other people on the other side of the glass, you know, and said, what do you think? And I'm sure they went, yeah, it's fine. And I said, okay,
that's
here
fantastic.
I am.
That's fantastic. Now, did you, like, go through comic books or anything at that point or try to find, or is it pretty much straightforward, like you knew who this character was at that point?
I knew who the character was. I didn't know all of the good, wonderful subtext that the writers, bless them, brought to it. And I was just thinking, you know, probably my favorite Poison Ivy episode is the one House and Garden.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whatever at the end. And that's because I got all of her colors in that one. You know, the vulnerability, which she rarely ever shows, you know, and the wish to be a normal person with a life and children and stuff, and then back to being Poison Ivy. They gave, the scripts were so good, Joe. Mm. Oh, so good.
Yeah, they're bringing in all these characters. They're doing so many great things with them. And I think they got the tone of the characters right. I mean, like, look, you could have an evil villain, you know, one-dimensional, and it's not going to go far. I think, like all good villains, Poison Ivy, she thinks she's doing right. She thinks she's saving the environment.
Does.
I think you have to have that, don't you?
She completely believes, you know, when you play a villain, you don't play a villain. You play someone who is... absolutely believes what they're doing is what you do, is the correct thing to do, period. Yeah. And I had such a good time with that.
Take us inside some of these recording sessions, because like we said, you are doing these as radio plays. You know, Kevin Conroy has mentioned on this show that it was just like a who's who of Hollywood coming in and out of that studio.
I know. I'm sitting... my usual spot when I was recording was... to my right was Mark Hamill, and to my left was Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Does it get any better?
You know, and then there's Paul Williams down at the other end.
Yeah.
Paul Williams, you know,
yeah.
and various other people that came on, you know, and my mouth would be a little agape, shall we say.
Well, as a musician, that had to get you stoked, just seeing Paul Williams in the room.
Oh, that did. Oh, it did.
Did
oh,
you like pepper him with music questions and things, or did you kind of?
No, I did not.
Okay,
did
so you did go a little
not.
Fangirl
yeah.
though. Like you mentioned, you weren't into that on Love Boat, but you did get a little fangirl with Paul Williams, right?
Oh, there's many people I felt fangirl like, but I didn't go up and bother them.
Okay,
you
you're professional.
I mean?
I do.
I guess it was. I mean, if I walked into a restaurant and I saw, you know, in my day, I had such a mad crush on Paul Newman, and I was lucky to meet him twice, which is great, but. Had he been in a restaurant dining, I wouldn't have bothered him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I just would.
Professional.
Had I been working with him, you know, and we're taking a break, I might say something, you know, that kind of thing.
One little voice credit I noticed was interesting, and we talked about that episode, Pretty Poison, your first one as Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
Melissa Manchester voices a couple of characters in that episode.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't think she was on the session.
I was wondering if you got to run into Melissa Manchester, because, again, as a musician, that had to be like,
musician,
it's Melissa Manchester right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't. You know what? And I could be wrong, because it isn't that my memory's faulty. My memory's pretty good, but this was a long time ago. I've done hundreds, if not thousands, of voice jobs,
yeah.
And this was a voice job.
And so
you know
many
what
people
I mean?
That,
it
yeah.
was a special. It was, you show up, you do the lines, they give you, go home, you know, the agent collects the money for you, you get it in the mail, you know. It wasn't, I mean, I loved doing them.
Yeah.
The sessions were exceptional fun. Just amazing.
But you didn't get the enormity of the project at the time, that this was the epic Batman animated series. Like, this was, for us, this was it. I mean, this was coming out of the movie. So, yeah, I get... If you're not in the world of Batman, that makes total sense.
Exactly.
What was Hamill and Conroy to work with? What were they? Because we've seen video of them recording. They just, and especially Mark Hamill, just like devours the microphone.
He is the most gifted person. He is astonishing. He can come up with anything you need, and he's very funny. And all I knew was, you know, Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know he could do this stuff, you know? And I was in awe of him. I really was.
Did that?
Yeah.
Do you get physical like he does when you're acting? Or are you sitting? Or are you up and around? What are you doing?
I'm standing, and I'm I sit when I do a long narration, okay? That's about the only time as a voice actor that I sit.
Okay.
Every time else, I stand because I use my body a lot. I need to use my body, my hands. As long as, you know, you keep your mouth focused on where the mic placement is, everything else is up for grabs, you know?
Are you acting out some of the things that Poison Ivy's doing, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
One of our all-time favorite episodes, and one that had life way beyond the actual episode itself, Harley and Ivy. The Demented
and then
Duo.
And later that wonderful little, you know, internet series.
Gotham Girls.
Yeah.
Talk about working with the great Arlene Sorkin.
These
are two doctors who have gone off the deep end completely.
You know? Wow.
You guys are fun to listen
and
to.
She is so gifted. So gifted. And darling and wonderful. We had the best time doing those. We really did. We're both actors. We looked at each other. We played off each other. And Poison Ivy was pretty much the straight man. She got a little, you know, some fun lines to say, but it was mostly Harley being crazy and Poison trying to say, geez, would you get a life? You know, that kind of thing.
I thought this is one of the greatest comedy duos, because when you think about the best, you know, Abbott and Costello,
yeah.
You think, you know, Laurel and Hardy, there's always the straight man. There's always, you know, the one.
Yeah.
But you have to. But the straight man is the hardest job to play.
Well, it's just as hard as the other. I don't think it is the hardest, especially for me. Arlene had a huge background in improv and ditzy blonde stuff and all that kind of thing. So she already was a pro in hers, and most of my work has been fairly level-headed, you know. I'm talking about the little silly, you know, mouse things, but fairly level-headed, fairly stable.
Pretty straightforward, heroic, yeah.
Straightforward. Yeah. You know, I have a good sense of humor, and I love to do comedy, but I've never been nutsy, crazy, fun, improv comedy girl. So mine was what was right for me to do, and hers was what was right for her to do.
That balance
and
is
I
what
love
works.
It. And by the way, I love being the straight man. I don't care. I don't care who gets the attention or who gets the most, you know, love from the audience. I like being the straight man.
Yeah, that's what makes the comedy work. I mean, it really does.
Right.
Because if they're
both
nuts and they're both going crazy, it just becomes that. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
She was doing improv. Like, I know that you're scripted. You talked about the writers, and they give you all these great things to do. Were you able to just find anything in the performances that maybe wasn't necessarily in the script, but some, like maybe Andre Romano would say, oh, I like that. Do that instead. I didn't think of that whenever we first started.
Yes. Andrea was and is a very talented director, and she's very, very tuned into actors. And when we would give her something that either wasn't obvious, maybe a long pause in the middle of a sentence or a different line reading than people heard, or maybe even a couple of words different, you know, she would always give it a chance.
What's your favorite part about voicing Ivy?
Her passion, her intensity, and how she will do anything to get what she needs. I mean, she will use her sexuality. She will use her plants. She will lie right to your face because she needs to have what she her you know, that goal of hers to save the flora on the planet. You know, it's really very intense.
Do you talk to your plants?
Not even close, and I have a black thumb. It's so sad. Every time I start plants,
maybe you should.
Like, well, you know, I don't really care that much. I can't have plants in my house because I have two cats, both of whom adore eating them and then vomiting all over my house. So I can't keep live plants in my house. And I have, where I live, I have a wonderful condo in Silver Lake in California. And I have a lovely little patio, and I have killed everything I've ever put out there.
In real life, you're more
so,
Catwoman.
Yes, that's right. I'm nothing like that at all.
That's great to find out, though. Okay, so all these different things that you're into, what are you into now? What can fans expect from you now? What's the latest and greatest?
Well, I'm doing my, I'm sort of writing a memoir, only it's not, you know, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I was born, and then I died. You know, I'm not doing any of that stuff. I'm writing different stories from my life, and once in a while, I'll perform them in one of these venue things. And that's been fun. I'm writing the film reviews for this small newspaper, but I love it, so I go to movies. I do a lot of answering on my Facebook page of fans. Let me see. I have a very, very, I have two grandchildren, so I go visit them in Washington, D.C. as often as I can. And I have a very active social life with lots of wonderful friends. Yeah.
You didn't write a movie review for Batman and Robin, did you? Back in the 90s?
I didn't see Batman and Robin.
Just curious. That was the Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Am I going to be in trouble?
No, nobody saw Batman and Robin. That was the one that killed the franchise.
Yeah. No.
No, Christian Bale had to bring it back.
Okay.
You were not alone.
No, I know. And you know, some of the Batman, I've seen the good ones. I mean, you know what I mean. Christian Bale Heath Ledger is, you know, I've seen the really good dark ones, you know.
Okay, I didn't know if you watch Gotham at all, because they're doing Poison Ivy.
I do watch Gotham. Oh yeah.
Oh okay.
So yeah, I watch Gotham now, but I haven't watched it. I mean, I watched the first season, and I keep meaning to go back and watch. What, do they have Poison Ivy on there now?
Well, they started off, they're all kids, so they had a kid Poison Ivy, and then I won't ruin it for you since you haven't watched it yet, but now she's adult Poison Ivy, kind of.
Okay.
But yeah, so there you go. I just didn't know if what your review of Gotham's Poison Ivy would be. We'll look forward to that. That'll be on your website, I'm sure.
I will. I'll check it out. Well, you know, and as I did her voice for several years, and then they started getting more famous people. You know, this is the whole thing with voiceovers now is all the famous people want to do this stuff, and which is great for them, but not so good for us journeyman actors. You know,
would you do the voice again?
Oh yeah, if they asked me.
Okay.
No one's asked me in quite a few years.
What voiceover would you like to do? Because there's so many characters out there. There's especially when we talked about, you know, strong female characters and things like that. Is there a character out there in anything, in any venue, you know, literature or whatever, or comic books or whatever? Is there a character out there you're like, you know what, if they ever do this project, I would love to do this?
That is a wonderful question. I would have to give it quite a bit of thought. Nothing pops up at the moment. I am a voracious reader. Voracious. I have been reading since I'm a small child under the covers with a flashlight, you know? So I really, really have a wide variety of things I read. I read mysteries like crazy. I listen to books in the car. I've done a little books on tape kind of narration, but I haven't focused on really pushing myself in that area because it doesn't pay that well, believe it or not. And also because it's very time consuming, and I'd rather be able to go out on auditions and stuff like that. But I love some of the, oh my God, some of the people. I guess I'd like to do a book that, you know, that could showcase some of my voices. I think that'd be fun, but I can't think of which one.
Do you have a favorite book or a favorite novel, even as a kid, that you just, your go-to?
No, I swear I don't have favorites.
You have a Desert Island book?
Well, I would take the complete works of Jane Austen on a desert island, yeah, because I can read her over and over and over again. But I have so many other things. The mysteries of Michael Connelly, I would take those. There's stuff I love.
Well, hopefully we'll hear some more voiceover work coming up. If we do, I'm sure you're going to be talking about it on your website. It's DianePershing.com?
Yes. Well, no. Okay.
That's the books.
Got another one. I have to.
I know. That's okay. The books, right?
I haven't updated my website in so many years, and that's one of the things I wrote in January as my goal. Update the website, and guess who hasn't gotten to it yet?
The time is ticking.
No. You know, but you can always send me a message on Facebook, even if I'm not, your friend. I think messages get through, don't they?
You're on Facebook. I believe so. I mean, I don't know exactly how that works, but you have a fan page on Facebook, or is it a?
No, I have just a Diane Pershing page.
You'll be somebody's friend. You can be Poison Ivy's friend. There you go, on social media.
Okay.
And are you on Twitter at all?
I just started because my son is a reporter and he tweets a lot, and I thought I should start reading some of his stuff, but I'm very, very ignorant about it.
Well, there you go. But there's the thing. You got the website you're going to be updating. You got Facebook. You're at conventions. You mentioned, what, a few more appearances coming
up
this year?
Oh, yes. The next one. Oh, we're going to have such a good time with this one. At the end, it's a Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
And we're going to be in Phoenix, and Kevin's going to be there, and Lauren Lester, Robin.
Nice.
And me.
You worked with Lauren back in the day, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that on Defenders of the Earth, or I'm trying to remember which one that was?
He was on one of either Centurions or Defenders of the Earth. It was one of the 65 episoders.
Okay.
I don't remember which.
Yeah, so you've got Batman, Robin, and Poison Ivy.
Exactly.
Oh.
And not only are we all going to be signing there, which is great for the fans, but they just introduced a thing where we're going to have a photograph session, so the fans can get a picture of themselves with the three of us.
Nice, man. Relive Batman.
I mean, it's really going to be, and it's like 3 days, you know, and it's fun.
You sound like you're having fun at these things. You sound like this might
I
be a thing for you now.
Oh, I did. And I've also done private signings at different venues. You know, people bring a whole bunch of stuff, and I sign for them there.
Okay.
I mean, I enjoy it, and you can actually read my signature. Seriously.
Well, that's great.
You can
you take
read
some
my
time.
Signature. You can make out my name. What a concept.
that's what we want to be able to see. And you said you've got a couple more appearances after that coming up, after Memorial Day?
Let me see. Grand Rapids in Michigan in, I think, October. And then I think I'm doing the big one at the end of the year that Stan Lee puts together.
Oh, the Kamikaze?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I'm maybe gonna do two more, but we don't know yet.
Wow,
so
that's gonna be you get a full slate.
I just love it. I think it's great. I have nice clothes to wear, and I put my face on, as opposed to today when
not like you're going out shopping, right?
Yes. No. Yes.
Well, we can look forward to some serendipitous moments meeting you at these conventions. That's gonna be fun for anybody that can attend these conventions. Diane, I'm telling you what, it's been a pleasure revisiting these characters with you today. Thank you for these performances over the years. We love them. We're enjoying them.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking, Joe.
Hey, kids, if you'd like to meet Poison Ivy and Batman and Robin in person, Phoenix Comic Con, that is the place to be Memorial Day weekend, May 25th through the 28th. As you just heard, Diane, Lauren Lester, and friends of Comic Book Central, Kevin Conroy and Michael Rosenbaum. They both were on the show. Michael Rosenbaum, he voiced The Flash in the DC Animated Universe. They are all scheduled to be there. You can find out more at phoenixcomiccon.com. And if you want to know more about Diane's novels, be sure to check out her website, dianepershing.com. I'm going to put those links in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. You can find them there in the show notes. Again, my thanks to Diane for stopping by and chatting today. If you catch up with her at one of these conventions, be sure to tell her Stuberman from Comic Book Central sent you. Hey, time to check out the Comic Book Central mailbag today. My mailman, Virtual Willie Lumpkin, he delivered some emails. First up is Scott Dorn, who writes, "Hey Joe, the Kevin Burns interview was fantastic. I have to say that his Jonathan Harris impression wasn't as great as his Vincent Price and Adam West. The episode was phenomenal and funny. I'm going to give Lost in Space a try on Hulu once the Flash, Arrow, and Supergirl seasons are over, respectively." Hey, thanks so much for writing in, Scott. Enjoy Lost in Space. I know you're going to get a kick out of that original series. So much fun. I'm having fun going back and rewatching the episodes. And I hope you heard Kevin's Mark Hamill impression. I think that one was probably my favorite of his. You did have to stick around all the way to the end of the show for that one, though. You folks out there do know that Comic Book Central, like a Marvel movie, always has a little surprise waiting for you after the credits roll, right? Just saying. All right, next up I heard from Paul Gleave, who says, "Hey Joe, I'm sitting at work just this minute, finished listening to your interview with Kevin Burns. Great stuff. After the letdown we had a couple of decades back with the release of the New Line so-called Lost in Space movie, I was ready to dismiss this reboot series out of hand, but now I'm drooling. It sounds great. I had my misgivings when I first heard about the changes they were making, but Kevin's explanation for these changes makes perfect sense story-wise, along with the need for other human characters to enter the scene. All I can say is bring it on. I just hope it all works out. If not, I doubt we'll see any more attempts to relaunch the franchise again. Certainly not within our lifetimes anyway. Thanks for another great interview. Cheers. And thanks for the email, Paul. I don't know. As I mentioned in the show, I kind of like the Lost in Space feature film. I don't know. I guess I'm in the minority on this. You folks, send me your thoughts. What do you think about the movie? I got a kick out of it. It is different. It's wildly different than the TV show. But you know, again, we do, as Kevin mentioned, we have the old TV show. I don't think he was a fan of the movie, obviously. But, you know, there's something in it to like, I think. I don't know. I can say I, too, am looking forward to the new series on Netflix next year. From all indications, it seems like they really put a solid creative team in place. So that's got... And it's got some positive stuff going for it. So, look, as we get closer to the next launch of the Jupiter 2, I just might have to do another Lost in Space series of interviews. So we'll see how that works out. So stay tuned. As always, stay tuned to Comic Book Central. If you'd like to reach out to me with your thoughts on Lost in Space, old 90s, new Netflix, whatever, Batman the Animated Series, Flash Gordon, any superhero, comic book, TV shows, movies, whatever's on your mind, anything, drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click that Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net, or you can record a voicemail and send that in as well. Tell me your thoughts. Let me know what you're thinking out there. And that will bring a close to another crazy cool episode of Comic Book Central. Thanks again to all of you out there for tuning in, for downloading the show, for streaming it, for sharing it. Couldn't do it without you. And I will be doing it all over again in no time at all, because next week on Comic Book Central, from Candyman to Klingon, from the world of Clark Kent and Smallville to the world of The Flash as the voice of the villainous Zoom, he has appeared in just about every genre in TV and film you can name. Next week, he's going to be appearing right here in the lair. The great Tony Todd, he's going to be zooming in for a chat. I know you don't want to miss that one. It's going to be a scary good time when Tony drops by. Again, if you haven't already, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you do not miss it. Until next week, keep talking to your plants and keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Special cruise to Cabo San Lucas to celebrate the 200th voyage of the Pacific Princess.
Aloha 302 Bingo!
How much did this cost you?
Everything I saved while you were in jail.
Well, what if the stamp isn't here?
Don't say that. It's here. Let's get started.